and place you under arrest. Not one word." I turned back and took Bidarte by the arm, leading him toward the opening, where we would be out of earshot, if not sight. Rockwell followed me and then turned to look at the group, George Lanier in the front, his face as red as a blister. In the half-light of the open doorway, I could see Tomas's eyes shining. I tried to reassure him. "She's fine." It took a while for him to reply. "Yes." "Is there any reason you can think of as to why your mother would have run from us like she did?" He swallowed and scrubbed his eyes with the balls of his thumbs, his face growing stony. "She is a simple woman from the provinces. She had been abused by some soldado back in Mexico when she was a girl, and my brother was killed by some security men from Pemex. It's possible that that when she saw the uniforms..." I nodded. That might have been a mitigating factor, but what seemed to set her off was my mentioning Sarah Tisdale. He said nothing. She reacted as if she knew the name and possibly the woman. His jaw clenched, and I knew we were done. I watched as he crossed his arms over his chest and then spoke softly to him. "I'm sure you'll want to come up to Durant and see about your mother."
"Certainly."
I walked him back into the shop, and something strange happened. Rockwell extended his hand, and Bidarte, who paused for only a moment, shook it. He then reapproached the big truck, not speaking to any of the men, climbed back onto the running board, and submerged himself in the work. I took the extra steps into the group and turned to look at Roy Lanier. "I noticed a number of children's clothes on the wash lines, Mr. Lanier. I trust that if those children are not going to the public schools here in Absaroka County, they'll be registered with child services so that county officials can see to their needs." He sighed.
"I suppose that's a final and parting shot."
I hitched a hand up onto my sidearm. "I wouldn't say final." Rockwell followed me as I turned to go, and it might have been the look that he gave George Lanier that caused the loudmouth to break the rules I'd laid down.
"I still want to know where our car is and how you got in here."
I could have ignored him. I could have let it go. But I didn't. Instead, I grabbed his nearest hand and drew his arm up into a reverse wrist lock that placed him firmly against the facing of the shop opening, his chin pressed against the tin, forcing him to look skyward. I snapped the cuffs on him and yanked him next to me.
"You're under arrest."
The others stood there looking at us, but made no move to stop me, and that's when I noticed they weren't even looking at me, but at Orin Porter Rockwell. I glanced at the old man and could now see he casually held a .38 revolver at his side. I walked George over to where I could see his father, fished the religious fob and ring of keys from my pocket, and tossed them onto his lap. "Wanda's keys, one of which is missing as the car has been impounded for evidence. You can come and get the groceries." I hefted his son's arm so that he had to stand on tiptoe. "And this you can pick up any time after the judge sets bail." With George's cuff chained to the D-ring on the floor of the bullet, I drove us out of the compound and up the canyon road until we got to the flat above. A glimmer of light was starting to cast a pinkish glow across the horizon to the east, and the high spots of the rolling hills were just starting to blush with the growing day. Still in a huff, I turned to look at Rockwell.
"What are you, the Houdini of guns?"
He looked at me blankly. "Give me that pistol." He looked unhappy about it, but pulled the .38 from his inside coat pocket and handed it to me.
"Careful, it's loaded."
I popped the lid on the center console and thumbed the cylinder open, dropping the shells inside. Afterward, I tossed the sidearm in there and closed the lid.
"Where'd you get it?"
He nodded his hairy head toward the bed of my truck.
"Out of the box in the back of your conveyance. There are shotguns, rifles, and all sort of armaments back there."
I'd forgotten about the weapons I'd taken from the youth of South Dakota.
"Jesus."
Rockwell nodded.
"He works in mysterious ways, does he not?"
When we got to the main gate, I undid the clasps, pushed it open, and drove through. Thinking about what I'd just done, and not being particularly proud of it, I sat there with my hands gripped on the wheel.
In a fit of remorse, I opened the suicide door, reached in, and uncuffed George. I pulled him from the truck and stood there looking at him, his eyes growing wide with the thought of what might happen next. I let him think for a few seconds, watching sweat trickle down from his hairline, then walked him back to the gate and placed him on the other side. I closed it, the chain link still rattling as he stood there staring at me. He wiped the sweat from his face and took no time in locking the three massive padlocks. I replaced the cuffs in the holder on my belt. He took a step back, I suppose just to make absolutely sure that he was out of reach, the signature smirk returning. "You come around here again, and I'll be waiting." I sighed and pulled my jacket back to reveal my .45. He stood there for a moment, his eyes opening even wider, and then started backing up, finally turning and running down the road. I yelled after him, "When you get back, tell them you escaped. They'll be impressed." Chapter 9.
They say that as you get older, you need more sleep.
I felt myself coming back as if from death. I was trying to climb out of a hole, but something large and feathery kept landing on my chest and pushing me deeper into the earth. Catching my breath, I'm pretty sure I snorted and then spoke through my hat. "Actually, you need less, which might explain the end result." I pulled my hat from my face. "I thought I locked that door."
"It doesn't have a doorknob. How could you lock it?"
She had a point. Rolling over, I lay there on my side on the stack of blankets and pillow I'd liberated from the jail. "What time is it?"
"Daytime."
She sat in my guest chair with a stack of papers under one arm and two mugs in her hands. She looked down at me, and it looked like the multicolored bruises under her eyes were just about gone.
"Why didn't you sleep in the jail? The kid goes to work at 5.
"There was no room at the inn." I coughed again, half expecting feathers to fly out of my mouth. "I don't know, all his stuff is in there. It felt like trespassing." She handed a mug down to me.
"Here, mother's milk."
I sat up and hunched against one of my bookcases, taking the coffee as she smiled.
"So the staff is dying to know how you single-handedly captured public enemy number old."
I mainlined the caffeine and tried to clear my mind, buying time with clever repartee.
"Huh?"
She nodded her head toward the holding cells, and I noticed she was wearing a ball cap, which was trouble as it indicated a bad hair day.
"Cousin It."
"Oh. Yep." She sipped from her mug and pulled the papers from under her arm.
"Where did you find him?"
I told her she was never going to believe me if I told her, and then did.
"Get the fuck out of here."
I raised a hand. "As God is my witness."
"He was in the truck all afternoon, even when we were down in Short Drop?"
"Twice." She settled in the chair with the papers in her lap, crossed her legs, and bobbed the tactical boot about a foot from my head. I wondered if she was going to kick me.
"You went back?"
I sipped my coffee. "I did."
"Alone?"
She looked out the window, and I was pretty sure she was going to kick me now.
"In the middle of the night?"
I gestured with my mug toward the holding cells. "With Cousin It."
"You took him with you?"
I yawned, even though it was probably a bad move. It seemed like a good idea at the time. The tarnished gold focused on me, and I was pretty sure it was the same look pythons give you just before they crush you to death and eat you.
"And?"
"Roy Lanier claims Wanda is one of theirs, but not his wife. However, it turns out she is Tomas Bidarte's mother."
She pursed her lips, and I had to fight to concentrate. "The guy with the knife we met at the bar?"
"Yep."
I sipped my coffee some more.
"How about you run a check on Tomas with the Mexican authorities? He made mention of a brother being killed by Pemex security, and that struck me as being a little strange."
She continued to study me doubtfully. "Mexican authorities. Isn't that an oxymoron?"
"Oxymoron is a little south of Mexico City, isn't it?" I smiled for the first time this morning. "How's your Spanish?"
She yelled over her shoulder, "Sancho, translation!" I drank my coffee as if my life depended on it, which it did. That bear, huh? She reached down, scooping up the sheaf of papers and handing them to me. Anything else? I stared at them, a complete dossier from the NCIS and the entire Bedarte family. Did I already ask you to do this? She shook her head. I ran the SOP on Wanda and the rest of the family popped up, kind of like Ancestry.com for criminals. She sipped her coffee. They got a lot of little leads in that family. I thumbed through the pages and looked up at her. Do I have to pay a quarter for the audio presentation? She set her mug on the corner of my desk and held out a hand. It was a habit she'd adopted in getting me to read reports that only worked when I had pocket change. I think I liked you better when you weren't making house payments. I handed her back the papers and then struggled to get two bits out of my jeans, finally depositing the quarter in her open palm. She poked the change into her shirt pocket. I was pretty sure I'd paid for a third of a living room by now. The earliest mention of the family is a Felipe Bedarte who was a big deal in the Mexico oil business in the 20s, till he climbed in bed with a lot of the big American oil interests. With all the revolutions, Mexico was changing governments every 20 minutes. But the one thing all the revolutionaries could agree on was getting the gringos the fuck out of Mexico. Felipe, on the losing end of one of these wars, found himself guarding the ex-El Presidente, some old one-armed fart by the name of Álvaro Obregón. Anyway, the jefe has a price on his head, and Felipe makes a lateral career move, whereupon he and his men shoot the old guy, asleep in his tent, dead. Oh, my. I sipped the last of my coffee and rolled my hand to prompt the history lesson. Bedarte Sr. and his men, mostly family, are seen to be visible muscle in certain quarters, unimpeded by such a useless appendage as a conscience. They hire out as a kind of private army through the decades, and then, in the 80s, they become the strong arm for the most powerful drug cartel, Familia Escobar, in Chihuahua. Where the dogs come from? She stared at me. Did you wake up on the funny side of your pile of blankets, or what? So Tomas and his mother are connected to the drug trade?
No.
No? No. Eduardo and Wanda shipped Tomas, their baby boy, off to, get this, Universidad de Salamanca in Spain. She glanced at the file to freshen her memory. There's a vacant time period for Tomas after college, with our reports of his involvement with the ETA, but about 20 years ago, Tomas's father, Eduardo, splits from the Escobar family because he sees what drugs are doing to an otherwise virtuous business like the Mexican Mafia. He walks away and joins the Church of the Little Lambs of Ivy, or whatever it's called. The Apostolic Church of the Lamb of God. Whatever. I looked in my empty cup. I thought all the mafiosos, no matter what their nationality, frowned on that. It's the in-for-life kind of thing. Evidently, Eduardo had the juice to do it for 6 months, and moved to Los Estados Unidos, Hudspeth County, Texas, to be exact. 6 months. Why do I not like the sound of that? Because the sheriff down there said the story goes that they filled him so full of holes you could have used him for a colander. Wait, it gets better. Our man Tomas Bedarte shows up in northern Mexico, like the shadow, and suddenly Escobar personnel start disappearing wholesale, by the carload, by the houseload, until every single member of the family is dead, men, women, and children. Now there's nothing to connect Bedarte to any of this. But in good old Mexican tradition, enough people are paid enough bribes to get Tomas thrown into Penal del Altiplano, the worst prison in all of Mexico, for what turns out to be 12 years. Just as a side note, the lifespan of the average prisoner in that place is only 5.
He got out?
Yes, and re-established his ties with the apoplectic Church of Sheepskin, which had a compound on both sides of the Rio Grande near a little town called Bosque. Whenever they got in trouble for the polygamy thing in the U.S., they would run over to the Mexican side, and whenever they got in trouble with the Mexicans, they would come back.
Who did you talk to in Texas?
The new sheriff, a guy by the name of Crutchley.
I hoisted myself off the floor and stretched my back in an attempt to get it somewhat in line and noticed Santiago standing in the doorway of my office.
What are you looking at?
His grin displayed the trademark dimple in his right cheek. Geez, I've seen Buffalo get up more gracefully than that. I ambled to my chair and sat down.
Just wait, your day is coming.
He leaned against the facing. Somebody need a translator? Do you want Crutchley's number?
Vic laid the papers on my desk, pointing at a number she'd scrawled in the margin, including her signature period she added to everything. It looked like somebody had stabbed the sheet of paper with an ice pick. I dialed and glanced up at her and Sancho. Bidarte. That doesn't sound Spanish. Without looking at him, Vic snapped a finger and pointed at Cesar Vitoria's face, and he responded, Basque. It means between the ways.
He's Basque?
Basco, Santiago nodded. At least part. Basque heritage makes up about 20% of the bloodlines in Mexico. She looked up at Sancho.
Dismissed.
He didn't move. The phone rang twice, and then a female voice with enough twang to string a mandolin answered,
Hudspeth County Sheriff's Department.
Hey, I'm looking for Michael Crutchley. This is Sheriff Walt Longmire of Absaroka County, Wyoming. Who's this?
Buffy, his wife. I think I talked to an Italian woman from your department this morning about those cuckoos down near Bosque.
There was a pause as she rearranged the phone against her ear.
I'm sorry, but our damn dispatcher receptionist is pregnant again and out of the office.
I hit the speakerphone and rested the receiver back in the cradle.
Sorry about that.
Nowhere near as sorry as I am. I married into Team Crutchley for better or worse, but not for lunch.
None of us were quite sure what to say to that, and listened as she talked to someone in the background.
Maybe he doesn't want to talk to you. Maybe he wants to talk to me.
We could hear a man speaking.
Buffy, give me the phone, goddammit.
More jostling.
Hey, Sheriff, I apologize for my wife. She thinks she's funny.
There was a pause, and I assumed he was walking into his office with the phone.
How can I help you?
I believe you had a conversation with my undersheriff about the Apostolic Church of the Lamb of God folks who were down in the southern part of your county?
Yeah, they used to be here up until about a year ago.
What happened?
Oh, back taxes. But from what I remember, they got paid in full here a couple of months ago, and there were some problems with the Department of Child Services, who got all over him about not having some of their adolescent boys properly educated. They claimed they had a school for them, but these teenagers couldn't even tell you the capital of Texas.
Hmm.
It's Austin, by the way.
I grunted. Thanks.
Bosque's in the southern part of the county. I've got a shoestring budget and 4,572 square miles of sidewinders, sand, sagebrush, and sons of bitches trying to make it to the promised land. I guess you don't have those problems with the Canadians up there.
They would have to go through Montana first. I waited a moment.
That's north of us.
He grunted back.
Thanks. What's the story on Eduardo Bidarte? Ancient history, like I told your deputy. He's about 20 years dead. The cartel over in Chihuahua decided to use him for target practice, and by the time they were finished, their marksmanship got really good.
I understand there was some wholesale retribution.
It's common knowledge that the son, Tomas, killed everything that crawled, walked, or flew with the name Escobar.
No proof, though.
Crutchley laughed. It's Mexico. Proof doesn't enter into it.
Any drug ties to the ACLG church?
Nope. I've got drug problems on every point of the compass, but I didn't with the Mormons.
He waited a moment, and when I didn't say anything, he asked,
What's the problem up there, Sheriff?
For now, just a traffic accident.
Name?
Wanda Bidarte, lately Lanier.
Big Wanda?
I stared at the tiny red light on my phone.
You know her? She was Eduardo's wife and Tomasa's mother and was pretty much involved with every charity in the county. She even started going to the Catholic Church up here in San Marcos. Thought she was going to revert, but I think they put the clamps on her.
He sighed.
Traffic stop, you say?
Yep, we had her pulled over and she tried to make a run for it.
Jesus. A pause. She was jumpy that way.
Meaning?
Uniforms made her nervous. I think I remember a story about her being kidnapped and raped by soldiers when she was young. I believe her daddy tracked them down and killed them. Killed everybody they knew, so I guess it runs on both sides.
Rough justice.
Yeah. Find anything in the car?
Just groceries, a gun, and a dozen bricks of ammo.
Why do you ask? Well, in South Texas, it's always about drugs or oil.
I thought you said they were drug-free.
Far as I know, but things change. Another pause. So, that's it? No, I've also got a found lost boy and a missing woman. Names? The runaway boy's name is Cord, and the mother's name is Sarah Lanier, formerly Tisdale. Well, the Lanier part doesn't help, since that's what just about everybody in that group goes by.
Blonde woman, about 30 years of age?
I've got a photo of her, but it's an old one. If you want to scan it and email it, I'll have one of my people run down to Bosca and ask around. There was a pause. Did you say her maiden name was Tisdale?
I did.
She have family? An oil man by the name of Dale Tisdale, who died in a plane crash down here a few years back?
I remembered the story Eleanor had told us about her husband, and found that bit of information to be of interest. That would have been this woman's father.
Was there any connection between the ACLG and him? Not that I'm aware of, but the accident happened right across the border. I'll ask around about that, too.
I'd appreciate it. I examined the cuff on my sleeve, threadbare. Might need a new shirt one of these days.
Can you tell me anything about Roy? Lanier? He's a piece of work. Kind of thought of himself as the king of Texas, at least down there in his shirt tail end of it. He's charismatic in a way, but I guess you need to be if you're going to be the leader of a cult.
He paused.
I'm not an overly religious person, but the few times we were down there, I noticed that they didn't even have a church. There were all these Quonset huts they were living in, and the whole place was set up like a military bunker.
He paused again.
You see him stand up yet?
Excuse me?
He lived down here for 20 years, and I don't think anybody ever saw him standing on his own 2 feet.
There was another even longer pause.
Anyway, I guess they're your problem now, huh?
I nodded, and then remembered I was talking on the phone.
Yep, if you could check on those few things we talked about and get back to me, that'd be great. Consider it done. Adios.
I hit the conference button and looked up at Vic and Sancho. The Basco was the first to speak.
That means goodbye.
I nodded. Thanks. I sat forward.
There were some words she said. Lo lamento, lo siento, por favor.
The Basco grinned.
The literal translation of lo siento is I feel it. But the meaning is generally I'm sorry, especially in conjunction with lo lamento, which is the more traditional form, and por favor is, of course, please.
I glanced out my window at the cloudless day. So, I'm sorry and please.
Yeah.
I thought about what Crutchley had said about drugs and oil, and asked Sancho,
you checked the entire vehicle?
Yeah.
And? Like you said, the gun, all that ammo and groceries.
Anything else?
He thought about it. There were some spare car parts, a rear-end differential and some bearings, but that was about it.
We were silent for a moment, and he grinned.
So, we have the historic Western figure back in custody?
I smiled.
We do. I brought Mr. Rockwell some hot tea. He seems to like tea.
The Basco smiled back.
He's quite taken with you. Says he hasn't been arrested in 150 years, but he'll put up with it from Sheriff Longmire.
Vic turned to look at me, the faded to yellow bruises providing nothing if not emphasis.
Well, at least this time you arrested him.
She continued to study my face.
You did arrest him, right?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, for Christ's sake! She stood and stalked from my office, headed for the holding cells.
Sancho sat in her seat.
I hope he's back there for your sake.
I guess he noticed the concern on my face.
Don't worry, he was back there a few minutes ago. Anyway, if we lose him, we'll just back your truck up to the jail and unload him again.
Boy, howdy.
By the way, they called, and the Bedarte fella's coming up to check on his mother and get the groceries. I guess they're getting hungry down at East Spring Ranch.
He continued to watch me.
Did you know that's the exact station wagon that was on the Brady Bunch?
I stared at him.
It was a TV show.
I then stared at my desk.
Something about that car bothering you?
One of the sons, George, seemed more concerned about the Plymouth than Wanda.
So he's a prick?
I nodded. Oh, yeah, but more than that.
You want me to get all board a patrol on the satellite? That's something I've always wanted to do. Tear a car down to its nuts and bolts?
Yes.
He continued to study me. You're thinking about it. If for no other reason, then it'll piss off this Lanier bunch? I leaned back in my chair, hooking a boot underneath the corner of my desk, as I always did.
Yep.
Vic re-entered, standing in the doorway.
He's arrested, officially.
Her eyes flicked between us like a cat's tail.
What are we discussing now?
Sizer Vittoria volunteered. Going border patrol in that station wagon?
Just to piss him off?
Everybody knew my methods.
Yep.
She started to smile, the canine tooth just a little longer than the others, growing more evident as she smiled more broadly.
I am all about pissing people off.
Take it down a raise, Sinclair. If you find anything, call me. Sancho grinned, got up from my guest chair, and joined Vic in the hallway.
What are you going to do?
I pulled my hat down over my face. My nap lasted 47 minutes before Ruby knocked on my door and told me Tomas Vidarte was here to visit his mother. I pulled my hat from my face and wrestled myself from the chair. The Basque Mexican poet mechanic was standing in the reception area alone, and I took the time to study him. Older than I had thought in my first couple of meetings with him, he looked more like a poet than a killer. Everything about him was elongated, stretched, but still balanced, maybe more of a bullfighter than a poet, like a poised steel spring. "You're by yourself?" He kept looking at the ground, and I noticed he'd made a gesture to the cooler weather by donning a black leather jacket.
"No, there are more men in the truck outside.
Would you like to load the groceries or visit your mother first?" He pulled at the corners of his mouth with a thumb and forefinger, and I was amazed at the length of them, like a concert pianist.
"First, I would like to see my mother."
I walked him out to the office parking lot, watched as he spoke briefly with three men in the front of another relatively new flatbed pickup that I hadn't seen. There was what appeared to be a brief argument, and then Tomas joined me. I stood beside the door and watched the three men, George Lanier being the one on the far passenger side. He leaned forward and watched me for a moment, and then leaned back in his seat in a huff. I thought about walking over and looking for the shotgun he'd carried the other night, but decided that there wasn't reasonable suspicion, yet. I opened my door and looked through the window at Tomas, still standing there. "It's unlocked." His face rose and he stared at me. "Qué?" "The truck. It's unlocked." He nodded and pulled the door open, climbing in and closing it behind him. "Trouble?" He looked at me.
"What?"
I smiled the warmest smile I could summon up. "Trouble with your compadres? They are not my friends." I sat there for a moment, and then started the bullet, backing it out and pulling past the sullen crew. "I don't think they're mine either." We drove the three blocks in silence, and I parked in my official vehicle's spot beside the emergency room. I think my truck knows the way here so well I could just drape the reins over the steering wheel and go to sleep.
"Do you see a lot of people hurt?"
I turned my head and looked at him. "Not particularly. Generally, it's me." He said nothing more. "How about you?" "My father was in a business that required a great deal of violence. But he walked away from all of that. Unfortunately, it did not walk away from him." He sat back in the truck seat, and it seemed as if he wanted to talk. "My mother, in an attempt to insulate me from the family business, sent me to school." He stared at the dash of my truck, not seeing it at all. "After college and before all of this, I returned home and became involved in my father's business. I believe it might be one of the reasons he walked away from all of it. An attempt to save my mother and me." He laughed. "I was younger then and impressionable, before I learned the ways of the world." He stopped talking, and I was compelled to ask, "And what are those?" His eyes shifted and looked at me, surprised I didn't know the answer. "They all involve money." Well, I guess in some circles it's pretty important.
It is everything. The only thing that can possibly compare with the power. But the only true path to power is through money.
He glanced around the vehicle. This truck, your badge, gun, and the oaths you have sworn. They are all simply for the protection of the status quo of power and wealth, the muscle for what is and what must be. Anything else is delusional.
It was silent in the cab, and I didn't want to argue with the man, but his philosophies were heading down a dark road, and I thought I should redirect them. I guess I disagree. A hard smile crept to the corner of his mouth as he slipped the stiletto from his back pocket and flipped it open.
Which part?
All of it. He held the beautiful but worn cutlery out for me to see. This knife, it is clumsy, unbalanced, and useless except for show, but it is the knife I carried in prison, and I am partial to it.
His dark eyes turned to mine.
I know you have done a background check on me, Sheriff. It would have only been prudent.
He looked at the knife again. It is a horrible throwing knife. But I had plenty of time to practice.
We do the best we can with what we have.
He laughed.
Perhaps we are all delusional.
Well, you wouldn't be the first one to say that.
You will argue the primacy of love or family?
I sighed. Fortunately,